Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to our 16th episode of Path to Power. I'm Matt Cooper.
And I'm Ivan Yates. Somewhat underdressed looking at Matt, but I'm here anyway.
You know, this is audio, Ivan. There's only a few people watching on YouTube who could see while we look. But anyway, we've lots to talk about because this was the week in which we got a new Taoiseach, Simon Harris, taking over from Leo Varadkar in, I thought, a distinctly underwhelming transfer of power, handover. In the sense that it didn't seem to create an enormous amount of excitement amongst the general public, and it seemed to attract less than generous appraisal from the opposition.
Well, I think, because we're going to discuss the impact of Harris on the polls and all this, the starting point on all of this for me is that this is utterly grotesque and bizarre. This close, matter of 8 weeks to polling day for a really important national election, the locals and the Euros, which are the bread and butter of Irish politics. So everyone's in campaign mode. So I expect on every conceivable opportunity between now and the 7th of June, Mary Lou will be saying, where is he today? And nitpicking over everything, doing TikTok videos herself, because that is what oppositions do. You're in maximum period of attrition.
You know, it's TikTok face-off, I think, these days. It's who can out-TikTok each other on the videos? Not that I look at them, but apparently, first day in office, Simon Harris's video is 155,000, but beaten by Mary Lou McDonald, who was closer to the 250,000 views of her TikTok.
But my central point is the culture of politics is once you get into the octave in the phase of the election, it is bare knuckle, and that's the way it's going to be. So there's no honeymoon for Harris, and actually all of this would not be of an incumbent government party's choosing. What Leo did was grotesque and bizarre and completely mistimed, and everyone is picking up the pieces from that.
What did you make of Leo Varadkar's exit speech? Because I thought, again, it was like commentator-in-chief speech on the way out. However, I thought he made a few interesting points along the way that was food for thought. Certainly that, you know, an awful lot of the things that affect us in Ireland are as a result of international trends. We sometimes behave here in Ireland as if we are completely oblivious to everything else that goes on around the globe. The same pressures in relation to housing and health and employment and the rest of it and immigration are at play throughout Europe, throughout the Western world, as they are in Ireland. And yet we sometimes behave as if we are unique in not knowing how to deal with them. And I thought it was interesting that he brought that up. Also that he went on about the treatment of politicians, not just by the general public, but by other politicians. And that then became, I thought, very clear during the course of the day when the nomination for Simon Harris went forward, and the opposition, maybe because they're in electioneering mode with 8 weeks to go, were decidedly not generous towards Simon Harris. Now, that said, I have to say, I think they were absolutely entitled to set out
all of the reasons. I feel like getting at the tissues here, man.
I know. Just hear me out, Ivan. You have an awful habit of not hearing me out. Anyway, the point I was going to make was, yes. So they were quite entitled to have a go at Simon Harris's for his lack of performance, perhaps, in previous ministerial portfolios. Classic example. I'll give you one. He promised to end scoliosis operation waiting lists in 2017 as Minister for Health. We still have a disaster in 2024 in relation to that. But when the election was done, and he won by 88 votes to 69, and he gets the applause, standing ovation of the government benches, they're in the opposition benches, they were actually sitting on their hands. And I thought that was real. You know, take your beating with a little bit of grace. You knew he was going to. You've made all your points, but okay, wish the man the best. You take. And sorry, even Gerry Adams, who used to be, and Danny McConnell, the editor of the Business Post, pointed this out to me in a conversation, that even when Gerry Adams, as leader of Sinn Féin, saw Enda Kenny appointed Taoiseach and Leo Varadkar, he wished them the best on a personal level, and he was magnanimous, despite all the things that they'd said about him and his involvement in the IRA. And that seemed to be beyond a lot of the opposition parties. Now, you're smirking
I'm smirking at you insofar as, get over yourself, Matt Cooper. Insofar as this, I can go back to 1979 and a situation where Jack Lynch was ousted and no election and how he became Taoiseach. You reread the transcript of what was said about Charlie and his flawed pedigree.
That was one expression in the entire speech.
Well, put it like this.
And there was murder about it at the time.
He basically said he was corrupt and he shouldn't have been Taoiseach and that his...
And that was correct.
And his past in relation to the arms trial and all that. Like, that's what I call proper politics.
It was one paragraph in the speech and the flawed pedigree, two words, caused all of the problem.
But like, politics is an iron fist business. I mean, let's be... This is not some kind of blood sport. This is actually knockdown, drag out. This is about power. This is about who is going to be the next Taoiseach. And you can rest assured that not standing up and giving a standing ovation is the least of the problems
I didn't ask for that. You actually, again, you have to listen to me, Ivan. All I said was a polite round of applause, wishing the best. That's all. I would never expect the opposition to give a standing ovation.
Can I come back
to
Leo?
Taoiseach.
Because I have a little bit of history on this. I said, because one of the things I do, and I'm doing next Tuesday, I do a lot of work for the construction industry, their annual conference, 1,500 members, 30 billion sector, and the subsidiary of that is the Irish Home Builders Association, which are just the resi people, and they have their annual housing summit, which is on Tuesday. So at this, the good and the great, like Leo as Taoiseach, like Pascal, and this week Dara O'Brien will be there. And I said to them on the margins of this, I said, if and when you don't get re-elected, it will be because you didn't listen to the building industry about housing. And I see all the signs in terms of, if your priority is 10 things, I'm going to do something for the pensioners, the disabled, I'm going to do something about reforming aspects of the court system, whatever it might be. The fact of the matter is, the job of a Taoiseach, and this is where Leo completely failed, is to say, my job is to look at the whole of government. My job is to say, look, a confused mind doesn't buy. And voters will buy you if you bang on. And you remember Enda Kenny, and people ridiculed him when he came in 2011. He just said, jobs, 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 jobs. But actually, we ended up with full employment. Now, what I'm trying to say is this, that if you really care about housing, and Harris says he cares about 250,000 houses, and I gave out about Batchick and Holly Cairns with their ritual 100,000 houses, this type of lip service drives people like me insane. Because when you get into the granular detail of this, zoned land, planning policy, judicial reviews, Irish Water, they told me this week, they're going to start refusing planning permissions because they can't provide water connections in the eastern region. This is all, there's no secret to this. It's building and building and building. And so what did Leo do to actually say, I'm actually going to deliver on housing? He didn't.
Well, let me come in on that a little bit, because one of the interesting things that came out this week, well, there's a number of interesting things on housing. They are going to change the level that they want to achieve each year formally as part of the development plan. They're leaving that later in the year.
Yeah, the National Planning Framework,
August. Okay. So we'll see what they then admit as to what our housing requirements are. Incidentally, though, we actually are having a much faster pace of commencements than I think anyone had expected.
Do you know why that is?
Tell me
and
why
the very simple thing, like, so we've had all these schemes, Croí Cónaithe, which is a subsidy between an unaffordable cost of billing an apartment. We have had Project Tusk. But one thing that Dara did, and hats off to him, he decided, you know what? All the development charges, which are conditions of planning, all the water capital charges, will give you a 1 year exemption. And it has dramatically changed the viability of schemes in Mallow and Sligo and all over
the country.
Does
that have to become permanent then? Because if we have this great need and we need to be building maybe 50,000 units a year to meet the demand, does that mean to get things, the stimulus going, that we have to do that? Because this increase in the amount of commencements actually undercuts one of Sinn Féin's strongest attacks on the government, that not enough houses and apartments are being built. Now, they still probably aren't being enough, but it's not as bad a problem as it was a few years ago. And I suppose then it'll come down to, particularly in an election campaign, as to how convincing Ona Brin will be on behalf of Sinn Féin in actually telling people that they can build more houses and apartments. Because I wonder how many people will buy into that, particularly when you have the Irish water situation, unless there's a major infrastructure investment made in Irish water by the state. And even if the amount of money goes in, you wonder how quickly they can actually do the work that is required. The same applies to Airgrid, because it's not just in relation to the industry and data centres. This also applies to being able to supply all of the new homes that are actually coming along. But I do wonder, I mean, sometimes you wonder about whether Ona Brin is involved in fantasy economics and that he thinks that things can be built for an awful lot less than they are being built for. If you continue with the Dara O'Brien exemption in relation to certain charges, that does bring down the price. But I think this idea that Ona Brin have of 300,000 per unit, particularly in the Dublin area, well, I think that's going to be one that he may find very hard to prove when it comes to election debates.
So I'd just like to drill down into the promise of 250,000 houses between now and 2030. So this year, last year we built 33,000 houses. The best estimate is something like 34,000-35,000 this year. And obviously, you know, we're talking about in over 5 years, you're talking about 50,000 houses a year. So let's do the maths. You're a numerate, okay?
Thanks, Ivan, for the compliment.
250,000 houses at basically, rule of thumb, country rule, 400 grand a pop. That's 100 billion. So I actually, so the Housing Commission is actually producing its report this month.
About a year late.
I spoke to two members of it who couldn't say a word about what was in it. But they did.
Will there be a minority report as
No,
all come to agreement.
But put it like this. What I wanted to say was this. Take this 100 billion figure over a 5 year period. So the government is spending a record amount of money, which is 5 billion annually. Mm. Okay? So the banks are putting in somewhere between 2 and 3 billion in mortgage finance. And developers are putting in somewhere around 8 billion a year in their own rollout. You know, your Ballymores, your Glenveigh, your Cairnhomes, they're all the tier one people. So they're investing. And then you have the tier two, which would be Michael O'Flynn's 300 to 900 houses, and then the smaller builders under 300. So they're investing somewhere around 8 billion a year. So it doesn't, you can do this on a matchbox. There's a shortfall to meet the objective of 14 billion a year. Now, Ireland's a small country and there are lots of global financiers who could actually, that's a drop of water.
We don't want them.
No, well, can I tell you what? The reason why they're not going to come in, because they would come in under what's called PRS. They build blocks of apartments, the private rented scheme. And basically, you know what? They're going to read the manifestos of the majority of the parties in Leinster and say, going to be a rent freeze for 3 years. They're going to reintroduce a no-fault eviction ban. You know what they're going to say? Bye-bye.
But sorry,
we're not going to invest.
They've already scaled back dramatically.
Because of interest rates and so on. But
those things they're aware of as well.
Where are we going to get the 14 billion?
And you know, there's another issue, which is, I think, going to come up when the local elections are on and then again in the general election in rural Ireland, where there's this disconnect between what they believe is the metropolitan elites. But this whole issue of one-off housing is going to come up again as part of the anti-green agenda and about clustering within various towns and people not being able to build on their own land. So I think that's going to be a very, very big issue as well as part of this anti-environmental
agenda. But answer my question, where's the 14 billion going to come from? Like, this is only one of the issues. You know, zoned land is another issue. Water is another issue.
The ridiculous planning system. And then you see decisions in the courts.
But where are we going to get the 14 billion?
You see things getting delayed. like the on the in the former church lands for the Archbishop's lands up in Drumcondra, the Supreme Court has now ruled against the planning permission. That could be 1,600 units, and we're now probably going to be back at square one. And if they do get built, the prices of those
and
are going to go up enormously.
And did you hear a meek out of anyone in Leinster House to say this is a disgrace? No, they're so busy talking about Palestine, they didn't have time to talk about the real issues affecting people.
Yeah, were you surprised that one of the first major statements made under Simon Harris's new leadership was on the issue of Palestine? That when we came back in on Tuesday evening, and we were trying to cover this live on The Last Word about who would be the ministerial appointments and the first speech by the Taoiseach, which in the end, we ended up not running. But we were then interested that almost immediately the headline became Micheál Martin saying that Ireland was declaring its support for the establishment of the state of Palestine. Was that an odd thing to sort of to allow to become one of the headlines on the first day?
Well, my understanding...
Even if it's maybe a good idea.
My understanding... Look, I have no difficulty with the substance or the content of recognising Palestinian state, the two-state solution. I have no difficulty with Ireland doing that. But let's get a grip here. We are 1% of the population of Europe. We're on the western edge of it. Nobody gives a tuppenny damn. And I'm understanding that one of the cold showers, the realities for Leo in his Washington visit was the White House told him straight up, would you ever go and F off with telling us how to run our foreign policy, our Israeli and military policy? You know what? We'll talk to you about your visas. We'll talk to you about your tech companies. We'll talk, and we love the pig in the kitchen Irish stuff and all the plastic paddies. But the reality is you have no business coming into this office and telling us how to run our foreign policy.
Farrakhan got a flea in his ear in the White House.
Well, what I'm saying is if he didn't understand the message. It was patently obvious. And so therefore what I'm trying to say to you is this. When I see today, as we speak, we're recording this on Friday morning, what Simon spoke yesterday and today about these urgent talks he's having with the Spanish Prime Minister about recognising this campaign to recognise the state of Palestine. Get an effing grip. People don't care about this. Insofar as there's nothing wrong with it. But as leader of the country, we want to hear what you're doing about health, what you're doing about housing, what you're doing about infrastructure, and what you're doing about sustaining the Irish economy. And like, have you learned nothing from Leo? Have you absolutely, like, who are your advisors? And you know one of the things, that, and this is one of the mistakes that Leo really made, right? So what happens? And I had to laugh. The very same thing happened with Simon Harris. So first of all, John Callan comes in, the Secretary General, to the government and say, they hand you a diary for the next week. They hand you of an in-tray of what to do. You know what I do if I see? Would you ever go out now and I'm going to speak to some of my politicos here and I'm going to decide? In other words, the civil service is running the politicians. The politicians are not running the civil service.
There's a number of things in relation to that I need to be taking notes, the things that I need to come back to. But could it be that, you know, you can care about all the domestic issues, but that part of being part of the world is that you do have a voice in relation to international issues.
I know now you're trying to wind me up.
So it's actually good that we can provide leadership in relation to how the European Union should treat Palestine. That we started the dominoes rolling. So we start, the Spanish come in, and then other countries will provide this. And remember, David Cameron in the UK, the new foreign secretary, the former prime minister, he has also been agitating for the recognition of Palestine by the UK so that the two-state solution can be brought closer.
So you think the Irish Prime Minister is on the same standing as a British foreign
No, I wouldn't underestimate
Secretary.
The impact that possibly...
I would underestimate I think we grossly overestimate. And I could not believe, like, the lead story on a lot of the papers, including the esteemed Irish Times, the morning after Harris was elected was, Ireland recognised Palestine. So what? Get a grip. Like, in other words, that we're so good at running the world now that we're actually not doing our day job properly.
Yeah, but hold on a second. Do you know what it was the anniversary of last week, and it was mentioned in Doyle's speeches this week? 20 years ago, Ireland led the world with the smoking ban.
Yeah.
Now, you think a small country like Ireland...
I never heard that before. That is amazing. That's been rammed down
70,
everyone's throats.
70 countries in the world followed Ireland's example. Smoking in the workplace ban.
Look... Again, it has some merit to it. But what I'm trying to say to you is this. When people talk about back to basics, when people talk about a disconnect, I have now put my finger on the very thing. So in other words, I am saying to you, if you want to solve the housing problem, you do not entertain, because people are dealing with the symptoms rather than cause, an eviction ban. The reality of this is some of these issues require a little bit more attention than just turning up for a photo op with what the Taoiseach of the day is now doing. And, you know, the fact that Micheál Martin is in foreign affairs and it's his day job to look after Palestine, but he's also the co-leader of the government, it actually says to ordinary people, these people are speaking a language that's not relevant to my life.
Now, if you might give me 30 seconds to raise another thing. Leo Varadkar, in his going away speech as well, and in an interview that he did on 6-1 News and RT the previous night, sort of had a regret about maybe a lack of ambition during the time that he was Taoiseach. And that actually, I thought, was very interesting because he particularly pushed the finger at the civil servants. And I was thinking back about this. The ambition, as you've already alluded to, when they came into power in 2011, was jobs, jobs, jobs. A lot of people have forgotten that the country was bankrupt at the time, whether we were at the mercy of the Troika for funding for various services and the rest of it, and that we had to revitalise the economy. And I think, in retrospect, the 2011-2016 Fine Gael Labour government will actually probably go down in history, despite their critics, as having done a damn good job in many of the things that they did.
Effective,
right? But the lack of ambition really interests me, because I remember at the time, in 2014, making a documentary for TV3 about our housing need, that we needed to start building houses. It was clear that even though it was only 4 or 5 years after the great crash,
Scaling up
was again going to be an issue. And the government just took years before then. They only sort of addressed it in a piecemeal fashion. Even when in the following years, there were people pointing out to them, look, the jobs are coming. The foreign multinationals are coming. People are going to have somewhere to live. You have to invest in housing. The lack of ambition was, instead of actually creating something new and different and better, they tried to restore what had been there before. So restore the health of the banks, get existing owners out of negative equity in their houses. There was a complete lack of ambition. And that then, it seems, he admits now, came true after the COVID. And I wonder how much of that was the civil servants exerting their power, trying to pretend that they hadn't been to blame for the crash back in 2008, that it was all the damn politicians' fault, and if only they'd listened to the more cautious and conservative civil servants, we wouldn't have got in the mess.
First of all, you're so right, and I'll give you examples of that. I remember when Owen Murphy was made Minister for Housing, when Simon Coveney was made Minister for Housing, and with Dara O'Brien. At every hand's turn, when they tried to come up with a scheme to make apartments viable, when the Land Development Agency would say, well, we're not actually going to build the houses, how are we going to have a joint venture with developers? No. At every hand's turn, you looked at scheme, oh, so they did all these announcements. We're expecting to get 3,000 houses from this. We're expecting to spend 10 billion on this. The money wasn't spent. The traction was hundreds. All why? The Department of Finance was let put reams of red tape around this. And you know, I can't believe really that the extent to which the politicians were puppets of the mandarins in Merrion Square, who actually stultified every attempt by people who were concerned about it. And the people that, like, if you want to solve the health problem, I think you should go talk to a consultant in a hospital. You know, don't speak to the bureaucrats and don't speak to the mandarins in the civil servants who actually are going to get paid the same job whether they deliver or not.
Do you remember last year, it's only coming back to me now, but Owen O'Brien took an awful lot of flack for personally identifying a civil servant who we felt wasn't particularly doing his job. I can't remember the name of the civil servant.
I could name 10, but go on.
It's not necessarily relevant, but he was castigated and was told to apologise and had to step back. And I remember thinking at the time, why didn't he stick to his guns? Why didn't he actually say, well, no, actually, if we do find underperforming public servants who are going to frustrate us in what we want to do if we get into government, we will change them.
No, and you see, this is one of the issues of being in your 14th year of office. You actually think that the civil service is the real world. You become absolutely embedded in the system, the culture, and you take decisions like Simon's first few utterances being about, you know, Spanish Prime Minister and all that kind of thing. Please, would you start to think like a politician? What politicians, and you know, the politicians will get fired. The civil servants won't get fired.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, a couple of things still from this week that I want to just pick your brain on in relation to the transition of power. First of all, the change in the cabinet. So, Simon Harris for Leo
Varadkar.
Don't
get me started.
Hold on a second. Well, this is what I am getting you started on. But just hear me out. Hear me out, okay? So you have Simon Harris instead of Leo Varadkar as Taoiseach. Peter Burke instead of Simon Coveney as Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. Patrick O'Donovan instead of Simon Harris as Minister for Higher Education. In what way does that constitute an upgrade on what was there before?
Well, it does constitute a freshness. I accept if you take, if any of those were to come into a room, the former group would make more impression on you and me, and they would have more clout, more heavyweight jungle, big beast in the jungle status. But that is actually the nature, of politics insofar as, but let's really get to the heart of the reshuffle. This was Simon's first big boo-boo. He absolutely dropped the ball. First of all, he allowed about a week to develop that law and order was very important to him, that we were getting back to Fine Gael basics. He was a supporter of An Garda Síochána, more Gardaí on the beat, and some of this other stuff coming out of justice, the woke stuff that you love, the hate speech, the
20 euro fine you've managed.
The 6 a.m. nightclubs and all this kind of thing. We're going to get back to business on this. And he let the speculation emerge and didn't contradict it that Helen McEntee was on the move.
Didn't she play a brilliant job? Are people on her behalf in saving
no,
her
Francis
job over the
Fitzgerald
days?
Is to blame for this.
But all of these inspired leaks to the media about how important it would be not to send out the message to
me
the
nausea.
Far right.
It actually gave me
that
nausea.
Moving her would be a concession it would be undermining the fact that she won the vote in all confidence late last year. It was a pretty skilled media campaign to make her look indispensable in the position.
Well, first of all, if you couldn't see through that, you're not fit to be Taoiseach. That's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is this. This is about Simon Harris putting his own imprint on this. To say it was underwhelming, the reshuffle, would be to completely understate just the non-event that it was. The fact of the matter is, and this isn't personal, she'd make a great Minister for European Affairs. She'd hold the umbrella. She'd do all that good stuff. But the fact of the matter is, she has become a lightning rod for a lot of people who actually, inside the tent, members of the rank and file Gardaí, who have no time for Drew Harris. They see her as joined at the hip, and they see more of the same. And if you want to invigorate the cops, if you want to raise morale that this is not just a waste of time, the revolving door, and you had the assistant commissioner coming out about road safety, just to pick an example, say everything is fine. And now Harris comes out a week later and says every cop is going to have to do it a half an hour on their roster of road work.
Well, sir, the Irish Daily Mail had a story during the week that we actually, over the last 5 years, have added 400,000 cars on the roads because of the expanding population. We have 400 less Gardaí doing road traffic duty. Right. Sorry, other figures that are of interest. I mentioned this on a previous podcast to you, but Drew Harris at one of the recent Garda conferences admitted, while the target that is in government programme is to get back to 15,000 serving members of the force, population growth means we need 18,000. And you see, I think, again, this is going to be one of the big issues when we come to all the debates around the general election in particular, is that okay, if we're going to need an extra 3,000 Gardaí, which opposition party has the magic formula to actually make sure that those 3,000 jobs are filled? Because I'm not sure anyone knows how to fill those jobs.
So the politics of this, right?
Yeah.
The first politics is you had a problem, your brand on the Law and Order was tarnished, you said you were going to do something about it, and you put new wine in the old wineskins, ergo won't work. But the second, much bigger problem. Any leader of a party has got to put it about there that there is actually a kind of dark, ruthless, steely side to them. And the truth is, if, you know, Frances Fitzgerald's going flaffing about, oh, the civil servants will run rings around her, and if other people say, oh, you can't do this to poor Helen, where is your steel? So the next time some gorilla comes out of the jungle wielding an axe, you're going to be defined by this as weak and always looking for pragmatic compromises. And, you know, because this issue also arose, would he shift Pascal? And the fact of the matter is this, that he actually did nothing in the entire reshuffle to exercise authority.
Okay,
and if you don't have authority, you're doomed in this business.
What about his junior ministers? He's gone for the 67-year-old Colin Burke, who is...
But that's just you and Cork and all those.
No, people. Cork North Central.
They're bitching and crying down Leaside
that way. They needed a Fine Gael minister because of the imbalance with Fianna Fáil. I mean, Colin... Yeah,
sorry, newsflash to Cork. You're going to lose more ministers because Micheál Martin and McGrath and Coveney all in the one constituency is utterly unsustainable. Get a grip.
Well, Simon Coveney is gone. You probably noticed that. The point I was going to make is that...
Corker, not well served.
No, actually, far from it, actually. See, you keep jumping in, Ivan, if you'd only listen to me, is that Colin Burke has been a very honourable, if somewhat dull, even though he's a nice man, dull time server. A 67-year-old first-time junior minister is hardly the future. Alan Dillon gets the job in Mayo. I thought it was a bit ungracious of Michael Ring to suggest he had turned down the junior ministries in two positions, because the implication of that is that Alan Dillon was a second choice. Now, that's the usual Michael Ring ruthlessness in politics. Mm. But Michael's 70. I mean, he's had his run. He was a senior minister, all the rest of it. Who was the other promotion? I'm trying to remember. It just shows you how much the junior ministries... I mean, Jennifer Carroll McNeil got moved. So who was the other...
So Eimear
Higgins.
Yeah, Eimear Higgins.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, sorry. Do you not notice the real point? The real point is when he was elected, there was some expectation that of the 13 retirees, right, that he would bring some of them back. How many did he bring back? Big, fat, zero.
Well, he couldn't get
them back.
It was too late.
No, put it like this. Actually, there's going to be five more. You know what I mean? You're going to have Leo gone. You're going to have Simon Coveney gone. I'm still maintaining my position in relation to Dublin Central.
Pascal will retire,
well, I'm
think,
saying that there's
to
nothing
it.
To stop him when it comes to Joe Carey and Clare, Michael Ring, and anything could happen with Bernard Durkin.
No, your best friend down in Kildare says he's running again.
Yeah, I know that, but should he be? He'll be the oldest ever TD in the history of the state if elected. And good luck to Bernard. Okay. But you know what? Mike Tyson stayed for too many bouts too.
Well, the Irish Daily Mail front page on Friday had also a great headline. The secret last-minute change that gifted Fianna Fáil a Fine Gael ministry. This, I think, was right
down
your
alley. I don't know the story. Tell me about it.
Well, I'll tell you about it, apparently.
Because I'm a great Gael, Gore. You know this.
Well, this is why I'm coming to it. Because apparently in the memo for Cabinet... in relation to the new cabinet and also the junior ministries.
The division of responsibilities, yeah.
Hildegard Nocton was named in the memo as the new minister for the Gaeltacht.
Does she speak Irish?
She's apparently fluent Gaelgore. Part of her constituency is in the Gaeltacht.
Okay.
And at the last minute, despite the fact this was in everybody's papers at the cabinet meeting on Wednesday, the first meeting, Simon Harris said, oh, no, she's not doing that because I want her to take on for this special subcommittee that I have on disabilities and stuff, so she won't be taking on the role in the Gaeltacht. And then they were left with, well, who's going to do it? And Thomas Byrne gets the call.
Apparently, the Minister for Sport?
Yeah, because apparently he's a fluent Gaelgore as well, okay. And part of his constituency is the Meath Gaeltacht, and he's happy out to take it. But the imagery of that, I mean, like, it just goes to the perception that you are sort of representative of this anti-Irish West Brit establishment within Fine Gael, that they couldn't even be arsed to take the ministerial, the Department of the Gaeltacht.
And the irony, if you go back a bit, because Joe McHugh was appointed on the understanding that he had Irish, it transpired, he didn't have Irish.
But he actually worked really hard
and he became very fluent in it. You know, it's all...
But does that
all that Irish thing is a bottle of smoke anyway. Like, it interests you people in the Mail and all that kind of thing. But actually, any appointment of any junior minister won't have any impact on the next general election other than some parish pomp issues of, you know, someone's careers on the up and down. In other words, actually, Alan Dillon, who I think would be a welcome addition to the Custom House with responsibility for planning, and I would welcome that appointment. But I would say, listening to Ringer, that he's looking for the exit door.
Yeah, and Michael Ring and Charlie Flanagan and Willie O'Dea have been the three former ministers who are now prominent backbench TDs who have criticised the government over the hate crime legislation.
They're called the soreheads.
Yeah, and the hate speech elements of that. I suspect, though, that the government may be about to double down on that, and one of the reasons why they are going to continue
Where do they get this political thinking?
Let me tell you, is that... this is actually turning into a bit of an embarrassment for Sinn Féin's opportunism in relation to changing tack on this, because Pat Daly, the justice spokesman, who actually is quite well liked by Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil people, particularly in the Justice Committee, they find him really good to deal with. He's a solicitor in a background from Kerry, and he feels good. But he has now said, oh no, don't do it. We don't want this brought in. But Sinn Féin voted for the hate crime legislation last year. They voted it through the Dáil. They're now saying that they wanted amendments made that weren't made. As it happens, you know, the amendments they wanted made would have actually strengthened the bill and would have made specific reference to hate crimes against migrants. That actually, and also Louise O'Reilly did a talk last year, and she came out that she was happy and proud that Sinn Féin had supported the government on this legislation.
Well, first of all, 2 points there. One is, the reason why Sinn Féin have gone down 10% in the polls is they are flip-flopping all over the place on issues. But it's quite clear the guys in West Belfast have said, we're not going to be PC anymore. We want to distance ourselves from the establishment, and that political imperative overrides it. So they don't care if Louise or Pat Daly is embarrassed. Like, the bigger project here is to get our working class, you know, rural vote back in business. We are against the government.
Two polls this week. Sort of snap polls, which one I think in News Talk, one for the Journal. The one for News Talk, I think, had it that a majority of people want a general election now, which is interesting.
What will they want next autumn?
What will they want any time? Anyway, the other part was the Journal actually did the standings of the various parties. Sinn Féin at 23%. And I just looked at them and went, wow, actually, what did they get in the general election?
24.5, yeah.
So, my God, Sinn Féin actually down in the opinion polls, if you believe the opinion polls, as to where they were 2020. I mean, I wonder, with Sinn Féin so obviously wanting an election, a general election now, you wonder, do they not think that they can rebuild back up to the 30s where they were last year? Are they afraid that they're continually going to lose out to people who are anti-government but who are promiscuous in who they will support in
all
the opposition?
All this demand for an election is horse manure, because they want to get the local elections in place first.
You know, Sinn Féin are not... Sinn Féin,
it's horse
okay,
manure. They actually don't believe it. It's just rhetoric.
Yeah, but hold on, I know that. But look, the local elections, and we'll have more time over the next number of weeks to actually discuss this. But of course, what may be forgotten is that Sinn Féin had an absolutely terrible 2019 local elections. They had less
9%
of the vote. Absolutely. Yeah. And they only won 80 seats around the country.
They lost 78 seats.
Yeah, they lost about half of what they had from the 2014 election. And which was why the 2020 general election result was such a surprise that nobody saw coming. Now, there's two ways of looking at Sinn Féin's position in relation to local elections. One is that they'll be able to claim a massive increase in seats.
Mm-hmm. Off a low base.
But the second point is, would people look at that and say, but hold on a second, what percentage of the vote do you get? This is going to be very interesting to see what Sinn Féin gets. Will it get 23% of the vote in the local elections? Will it get 30%? Could it be, given that you've been very much talking about the strength of the independents and you're predicting over 300 seats for the independents out of the 920 plus around the country, could it be that Sinn Féin will actually have, again, a disappointing local election? And then will that matter to the general election? Or could it be that it will sort of highlight that they don't have the organisation in many constituencies like they might have in urban areas, and that they can't match the organisation of independent TDs?
Well, my take on that poll was slightly different insofar as I've said to you all along, this is a hospital pass from Leo. There's not going to be a bounce for Simon. He's actually less known, as you were making the point about the kind of ministerial downgrade. The fascinating thing for the poll, for me, is Fianna Fáil on 16-17%. And Fianna Fáil's Ardesh is on this weekend.
So that'll change everything, won't it?
No, well, someone needs to do some serious thinking within Fianna Fáil of what is happening in the polls. So the fate of Fine Gael, and I think, is broadly determined. Like, let's be clear, Simon Harris is not being brought in like Big Sam Allardyce to save a team from relegation.
But
the
he can't. He failed with Leeds last year. He was brutal.
No, you get my point. Sometimes you get in a caretaker who will just do a job for the immediate election. Fine Gael have decided to take the long haul view of, you know, and this happens with teams that go down.
Actually, can I just stop you for 1 second? Because you just reminded me of something a friend said to me this week, and I think she actually had a really interesting point. And we will get back to Fianna Fáil. Her argument was Fine Gael missed an enormous chance that what they should have done was put Heather Humphreys in as an interim leader, as in put her in as leader, but given that they'll be out of office after the next election, automatically they would be in a position where they would have to have a leadership contest. She could have said, I've done my year.
Sounds a bit like Liz Truss.
Hold on now a second. Hold on. You're a desperate man for not hearing out the argument.
No, but you can't change your leader every 6 months.
No, hold. Well, I think Fine Gael went through a period in the 90s.
No, you'd be going Leo, you'd be going Heather, you'd be going Simon, you know. I know. I mean.
But can I ask you, when you were a cabinet, did you ever listen? Because the point I'm about to make to
important
you...
The important point is to be heard, rather.
Well, I'm going to have to struggle to make myself heard, but I'm going to tell you something anyway. The argument went along these lines, is that Heather Humphreys would have been better than Simon Harris at shoring up the rural base of Fine Gael and would have appealed maybe to the older generations as well to come out and vote. And as well as that, would have taken away one of the major things for Sinn Féin going into the next election, that one of the things they're going to be pushing is very much make Mary Lou MacDonald the first ever female Taoiseach. And Fine Gael could have beaten them to the punch by putting Heather Humphreys in as that person.
Could have, would have, should have.
Yeah, you know, I know, and I mean, it's obviously... It's
that
and
2 euro gets you a cup of coffee and insomnia. But
I think, you know, we did say a couple of weeks ago that... I don't know, where do you get your coffee? You get it for 2 euros. But we did say a couple of weeks ago, Fine Gael missed a trick by the speed with which they put Simon Harris in as leader.
They were plunged into a situation. They circled the wagons and did the best they could because this was all Leo's fault. But I want to come back.
Go back to Fianna Fáil in the Ardèche.
So if Fianna Fáil want to rescue themselves in the polls, the way you get a second term is not saying we are the purveyors of stability and the whole, you know, shtick that like, we're keeping this government together and the country is doing well. You get no reward for that. That's eaten bread. It's all forgotten. Whereas, how did the Tories get an extra term they weren't entitled to? They said, you see that guy over there, Jeremy Corbyn, and you see his putative Chancellor, John MacDonald? They are so off-beam. They are so outrageously left. They will spook the horses. And Middle England decide, Jesus, we'll hold our nose voting for the Tories and for Boris and all this kind of thing, but we actually don't want Corbyn. What Fianna Fáil have got to do now is have Project Fear that actually says that Mary Lou MacDonald and Piers Doherty is Corbyn and MacDonald in disguise. That's the first
MacDonald.
Thing. The second thing they've got to do is have a distinctive brand rather than the government and the programme for government. This is what we would like to do if you gave us the mandate to be the largest political party. And it's about childcare. It could be building on some of the housing stuff that Dara has done or whatever. I don't care. But like the point is this, Fianna Fáil do not have any distinctive brand and they are suffering hugely and they need to A, create a benefit out of the stability, which is, you know, creating a fear factor, which they have failed to do. And I actually think Fianna Fáil are sleepwalking.
I think you've picked the wrong bogeyman in Irish politics. I think your assessment of making Sinn Féin like the way Labour were in the UK doesn't work because the bogeyman is established at the moment for many voters in Ireland. They're not.
Who is it?
It's the Green Party.
Okay.
It's not Sinn Féin and its economics. It's what the Green Party is trying to do environmentally at present. That's the bogey for so many people around the country. And Fianna Fáil's problem is that they're in government with the Greens and implementing the same policies. So it's too late.
I get that, but I'm talking about the money fear you need to create. That's a green fear that there's going to be more layers of sustainability and changing our lifestyle.
Sorry, Ivan, the green fear is down to money as well, because the green fear is down to things like it will be more expensive to actually drive my car. It's down to things like they're going to make me go and retrofit my house and I can't afford to do that.
But the Greens
charges
the Greens aren't going to eat Fine Gael's or Fianna Fáil's lunch. They're part of the government side of the house, but leaving that aside, they're not a threat. Sinn Féin are a threat. You know, independents are your threat.
Okay, and but so then why is it?
You've got to do Project Fear on the ones that are trying to eat your lunch.
But why is it then that Fine Gael has been consistently over the years one that's been a stronger critic of Sinn Féin than Fianna Fáil? Although, now that I think of it, and having sat through the hours of Tuesday's nominations of Simon Harris's Taoiseach, it was noticeable that Micheál Martin, in his speech supporting the nomination of Harris, did try to make it a lot about the dangers of Sinn Féin in government.
You know, I'm saying that the Fianna Fáil front bench, McGrath, O'Brien, Chambers, Norma Foley, they should be attack dogs. They're leaving it everything up to Micheál Martin. And the fact of the matter is, what I'm trying to say is this, I've given you a suggested strategy, a positive campaign, a negative campaign. What is Fianna Fáil's strategy? They cannot continue to sleepwalk or to trade on the record of the government, because you get no thanks for that.
If you want to contact us, we do have an email address. So it is mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. So that's mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. And thank you to the various people who have been stopping me in the street to talk about the podcast, and particularly who enjoyed all of the questions coming in. So keep the questions coming in, because we will do it on quieter weeks where we will actually take your questions and we will try to answer as many of them as possible in the constituency clinic. There was a member of the Oireachtas who said to me last week that it was very cynical of me to suggest we would take all your questions and do nothing with them, that was not the way they operated. What do you think of that, Ivan?
Well, the truth of it is, the rule number one, when someone comes to your clinic, doesn't matter if you deliver or don't deliver, make sure they get a letter. And make sure they get a letter from the minister as well.
So we'd like, say,
at least you can say, did you get my letter?
So even if nothing happens,
so I would always carry a pocket notebook when I was a TD. Like, you're always on duty and you always write it down and make sure they have a letter by the end of the week.
Okay. Is that it? Anything else?
Well, put it
anything
like this.
You want to get off your chest?
Put it like this. I hope I've tried to have some small indent into the media bubble you're in and to explain that actually Leinster House, the government and the new government and all of that, when they're talking about Palestine, when they're talking about all these issues, they are actually disconnecting from ordinary people.
Do you know what you're like with this talk of the media bubble? How long are you out of politics?
2002, I left politics.
How long have you been part of the media? You're like one of these former footballers.
When people
you're
call
like
me a
one
journalist.
Of these former footballers no. who becomes a pundit commentating the matches, giving out about the media, and you go, sorry, what are you doing yourself at the moment?
No,
you are part of the system that you're claiming to revile.
And any
you
time,
are more of a media
anytime,
insider like, than anyone else.
You are a bona fide professional journalist,
yes.
Right? If anyone called me a journalist, I would say, please wash your mouth out, because I am not a journalist. I don't aspire to be. I don't claim to be that either.
That's enough for this week. From me, Matt Cooper.
And from me, Ivan Yates.
Please recommend us to a friend. You can find us on Apple or Spotify or YouTube or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And hopefully you'll be back again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.